تبريره إن يعني الحيران إن يعني لك أختيري مولا مش كوليري لأخرن قال لينخ سوي شفار نتيرو كيان الروي أختيران كيان المان المينا
Hello, everybody.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to A Pair of Banshees.
Hello, hello. Yes, we're here as promised, though, because we have more time on our hands, are feeling a bit more dedicated and motivated. Back at you again in 2021 with a second episode.
We're actually doing really well. Like, this is our streak is up. Like, it's like Duolingo, you know what I mean? We're doing really well. Yeah.
We're on fire. We're getting those gems. Because what we're going to be talking about is kind of the Festival of Imbolc and what happens on, you know, February 1st. We're recording this 2 days beforehand, you know, that we're hoping to put this up on the day of Imbolc. You know, because it's all about this whole time is, you know, the flowers will be coming up, the buds on the trees are growing, you know, it'll start to get brighter and warmer. You know, it's very hopeful and nice. You know, the animals will start to get pregnant soon.
Woohoo, the animals, more lambs.
More lambs, all the little creatures coming up. It's nice. Like, it's a lovely little thing. So in that kind of sense, yeah, it's a time for, like, introspection, thinking about, like, what you want for yourself, you know, in the near future, a time to kind of be reborn, basically.
I mean, like,
that's a bit dramatic, but in a non-extreme sense.
Like, we're saying this in a lockdown in Ireland that's going to continue into March. We know this.
Yes, but we know.
But, like, at the same time, we could kind of, you could turn this on its head and say, okay, the month of February, as Jenny said, is this month of, you know, planning for the future and, you know, rebirth and, you know, looking after yourself and preparing for something. And maybe that's just what we can do in this month is we've got a lockdown. So let's prepare for something, whether that's, you know, preparing, you know, like a healthy food, or whether that's, you know, getting up our training, or whether that's reading more, whether that's, you know, researching kind of like, you know, courses you want to take, or, you know, ideas that you want to expand upon, you know, on project work. And we know how hard it is to plan for stuff like that. But, you know, I know I'm trying to take the 6 weeks to do the stuff that I wouldn't do normally. And I know that's very hard. Like, I have days where I'm shit and I don't do anything.
Not motivated to do anything.
If I can achieve one thing a week that I know I wouldn't have done, you know, if I was in my previous busy life, then I'm content with myself. And sometimes you just take that and roll with it, like.
Yeah, and it can be smaller things that, like, maybe none of us, I know I haven't. I've been completely depressed and unmotivated, so I haven't done anything for January. So for me, I'm going to try, you know, just something small, like take care of yourself more. Start doing little things that make you feel more alive and more sane and more happy. Little things like that, creating little maybe rituals for yourself in the mornings.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I don't know, taking a bath here and there while you read and light candles and maybe go to bed earlier. Things like that. It doesn't have to be anything major. It's just, no. Yeah, it's a time of hope and rebirth and kind of light returning to life, you know? So see that in any kind of grand or small way that you want.
Before we get into the episode, will we touch on the weird thing that happened in last week's episode?
Yeah. We wanted to bring it up because it was, I mean, it could literally be nothing, but it did kind of freak us out, and it's just amusing and a bit creepy.
Yeah.
So you wanted to touch on it.
Because we didn't really address it in the episode, we only kind of appreciated it in the editing process. And we were like, actually listen to this again. This is really weird. So maybe people didn't realize it. So if that's fair enough if you didn't, because we didn't kind of point it out. But at the start of last week's episode, so just in the Mary's on the Move, or when we talk about moving statues, if you go to the very just after our intro song, you'll hear this like really weird breathing noise.
Horrible.
And the two of us being like, what the hell was that? And then we go into the episode. But we kept it in because, you know, it was like, what? We can't really explain. Maybe it was feedback, because obviously we're recording over Skype. I don't know. Maybe there's a tech head out there that can say, oh, that was just, I don't know, you heard electricity. But
it was creepy nonetheless, yeah.
It was creepy because, like, how do you pick up ghosts through, like, this kind of recording?
Yeah. No, yeah, this is why we just wanted to touch off it, because it's amusing. I made a little video where I kind of heightened the sound and put it up on our Instagram if you want to go listen to the sound specifically. It's just eerie and weird, and I absolutely didn't cop it, and we got so into the episode, we never like went back to it or talked about it. And that's why, we just kind of continue normally. To just go into our episode after it happened, because we were thinking maybe we just edit that part out, but then we decided to keep it in because it was strange.
So go look at the Instagram and see, because we want to get opinions, because the two of us are kind of like, what?
Did we catch a ghost?
Are we just stupid and it's obviously a rational phenomena? Like, I don't know.
I mean, probably, but also it was eerie, and when I played it back after we finished recording, like, it gave me tears in my eyes because it was creepy.
Whoa.
Because it just sounds like somebody, like, on the phone to you breathing really heavily, and it's not something you want to hear.
Like, what horror film is it where they do that? Scream.
And Scream, he calls them, but, like, you know, so many things that happens. You answer the phone call, and it's like, I don't need that.
No.
We're trying to record a Banshee episode. I don't need this.
No, we've enough weird stuff going on.
Exactly, because considering the fact that when we finish an episode, something weird will happen in one of our houses, but that happened, that's what happened before the episode even bloody started.
I know, yeah.
We just wanted to address that, and how we were perplexed and amused and creeped out a little bit, and it is on the Instagram. It's very weird, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But anyway, so we'll go into chatting about the lovely February stuff, and mostly about this pagan festival of Imbolc and what we know kind of now as St. Bridget's Day and things like that, and how it all started and what it even is.
It's actually one of my favorite times of the year is spring. Like, I particularly love around Easter, but like, I love...
Yeah.
I don't know. I've always liked February because it's like the start of something. It's like, even if it's dull and raining, it's like, okay, but you know, you're looking into spring. It's not like where you're in November and you're looking into still more months of winter, or even sometimes in September, you can kind of feel that dread of the oncoming winter. But like when you're in February, it's like, I know I'm looking into spring and I know I'm looking into summer.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's nice. And again, yeah, I can feel that. It's like when I feel the new year coming around, there's like something in the air that I can kind of smell and taste and feel. And you're like, okay, no, but it's lovely. Like, I can feel things growing around me and getting lighter, you know?
Yeah.
I really enjoy that. It is. It's really hopeful. And like, yeah, we've just got sunnier and warmer and longer days ahead, which is nice.
I hope so.
You know?
Yeah.
Or, you know, we say that in Ireland where we get like 4 sunny days in the summer.
We have longer days ahead of us. Whether there will be sun. Is another
that
thing.
Is questionable, yes. But I will look forward to the longer days, because that alone just really improves my mood and I love it.
Yeah.
You know, because we have the joy of like summer days being like, you know, it's sunny till like 10 p.m. and I live for that.
Oh, I love it. Absolutely. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you're like 5 o'clock in the evening. Oh, sure, I may as well go to bed.
It's awful. And yeah, you wake up and it's gray and raining. So how would you want to do anything in that? Like,
yeah, no.
But do not despair, because you get to make St. Bridget's crosses, and you know, the good, I was gonna say the gooder. What's wrong with me? The gooder. the better and brighter days are coming. So
yes.
You know. But yeah, so let's go into Imbolc.
Imbolc.
So in bulk, it's traditionally like celebrated, you know, February 1st. It was kind of celebrated from February 1st through like sundown to the next day. But also apparently it would kind of change, you know, throughout, because they would have never had like a specific day, you know, in Celtic times, for example. They would have just kind of waited when, you know, when it felt most right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, especially as we said, well, firstly, before I talk about that, it's the halfway point between winter solstice and spring equinox, as well. So it's this, again, as we like to talk about, liminal times and liminal spaces.
Love it.
It can be counted as that. It's just, yeah, it's this midway point. It's the first, it's like everything's just about to grow and kind of the light's about to return. But it's also this exact midway point between things again. So it's this liminal space again, you know?
Yep. They probably used, I would say, obviously sun markings. They probably had like tombs and, you know, shrines and stuff built that when the sun was at these times of the year, it would, you know, it kind of like a Newgrange thing. It would light up a stone. It would light up a passage. And that would be like, oh, here we go. Imbolc.
I think so. And I, we have passages that line up with an Imbolc sun, actually.
I love that. I freaking love that.
Yeah, we have megalithic monuments in Ireland. So one of them, so they line up with Imbolc and Samhain, as we know. And these are the Mound of the Hostages on the Hill of Tara.
Oh, yeah.
And Carn El at Schlieve na Caile.
That's Lochru. That's my neighbour. My neighbour.
So your neighbour glows at Imbolc and Samhain.
It does. I'll tell you about that one. So it's kind of a controversial thing.
Really? Because
the land around the cairn is private, but the cairn is public.
Yes.
You can see the issue. Private land to get to a public thing. I don't know how much I can go into that, but use your imagination there. It's not well visited, as you can imagine. But inside the cairn, it's a fully formed cairn, and it's apparently, there's obviously four, it's like kind of like a cemetery. It's one of the more decorated cairns that is on the hill. And inside the cairn, there is a limestone pillar. And this limestone pillar lights up with the Imbolc sun. And limestone is not native to the area. So they saw this stone and put it there and like use this as a tool. And I just think, wow. Like, imagine what that must look like. This single golden pillar in the sun rising. It must be beautiful.
It must be incredible. Yeah. You took me there, didn't you?
Not to this one.
Or not this one.
The one... its neighbor that looks over it. I did.
And even that was absolutely, it was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Like, this place is amazing and has multiple, it's like one big cairn that has multiple other kind of wreckages or remnants around it as well. It's amazing. Yeah. It's such a rich little spot and I can't believe it's just hidden away and nobody talks about it or knows it.
Yeah, and that's the equinox sun, and then this one's lined up with the Imbolc sun. And there's two other cairns, but they're kind of semi-destroyed. So maybe they lined up with other suns. Oh my God, imagine if it had been like Imbolc, Lunasa,
Beowulf. They must have had this. Are you telling me they didn't have things where they went to celebrate all of these things in the year?
It's just, it's notable because it's four hills together. Do you know what I mean? Like, it rises and falls. So if each hill kind of had a light for the different four points of the year.
Oh, stop.
Jenny.
Because there's four fire festivals.
There's four fire festivals.
So maybe one hill each.
I just...
No, this stuff baffles me because honestly, like, I couldn't make that now.
No, we wouldn't even... No.
I can't fathom that now. I couldn't myself make that now. And they made this... Yeah. Like, so many years ago, and it's older than the pyramids. And yeah, I can't. I'm so baffled and fascinated by it.
Yeah.
Very simply, the name, we'll keep saying it, but as Sarah brought up to me, and I was like, yes, that is correct, and it's very interesting that so the word, the etymology of the word, it's usually written Imbolc, ends with a C, but or it's written as Imbolug with a G. And Imbolug in Irish literally means in the belly. You know?
Yeah.
So I think that's fascinating. Like, the name of the festival literally means in the belly, but it's like it's been condensed into one word, you know, sort of Mbolok. So literally, it's a day of pregnancy.
Or in my case, you know? It's a day of eating too much food and feeling bloated.
That's okay. That's food pregnancy. That's fine. You know, but yeah, originally it refers to the pregnancy of ewes, ewes and, you know, other cattle, I suppose, you know, because now is it's the kind of time where again, why the day of the festival will kind of change in pre-Christian times, because you would kind of, you know, you didn't have a calendar marking the days specifically going, ah, sure, there's the 1st of February coming up. They would have, you know, that's why they were so in tune with nature, because you would have watched kind of the world waking up around you and gone, oh, look, the ewes are pregnant, the cattle are pregnant. Right, it's that time, you know.
I love that.
Yeah, I love it too. I mean, in modern Irish, that's what that means as well. In the belly, it mullug. And then there's other kind of etymology trying to explain the word, that some of it in old Irish could be to wash or cleanse oneself, which is, you know, how do you say, in tune with this, because it is kind of like a purification.
Yeah.
Festival as well, referring to kind of ritual cleansing and maybe purifying the cattle, that kind of stuff as well. A man called Eric P. Hamp derives it from a Proto-Indo-European root meaning both milk and cleansing. Again, that's very, you know, in tune with it all. A professor, Alan Ward, derives it from Proto-Celtic embibolgan, meaning budding, which again, you know,
spring, all spring vocabulary, like, yeah.
And the earliest mentions of Imbolc in Irish literature date back to the 10th century. And all the poetry around the time relates it to, again, the holiday of ewe's milk, with the intention of purifying it, kind of drinking it to be purified, maybe purifying the cattle. That is kind of, we think of that image as a Bealtaine more kind of thing, where, you know, they'd light bonfires and pass cattle through it. But, you know, it is sort of the same vibe where, you know, you would depend on your harvest and your cattle for food, you know. They're about to be pregnant and provide, I mean, I'm a vegan who's talking about this, but, you know, milk and then they're young for more milk and more food and that kind of thing.
And I suppose this is really important, because if right now doesn't go right, the rest of the year can fail.
That's what I would have meant for you.
Yeah, like, this is, you have to get the babies being born now, you know, the crops being sowed now, you know, because that's why they have flowering seasons. If you plant your flowers too late in the year, they're not going to grow right, you know what I mean? And that's at a basic level. So if you don't get your animals right now, then, you know, Bealtaine and Lunasa and just your general kind of like welfare through the year, depending on that food source, is going to be heavily affected.
Absolutely. And that's why, that's why these festivals are so intertwined with nature and the cycle of nature and stuff around you. Because that would have been so vital. That was your lifeline. That was your life source, you know, back then. And it makes sense. I love this about pagan festivals, or like where the origins of festivals were, because they were so in tune with nature's clock. You had to be like.
And we've lost that now, you know.
Absolutely. Like, we're on weird time. We're on capitalist time. We wake up, we work, we go to bed, and we're so out of tune with our own bodies, let alone like nature.
Yeah, like our week is Monday to Friday, or Monday to Sunday then, you know, and it's that's how we structure our week instead of going by seasons and things. Like, I don't really know how long a week was in Celtic times, you know, but like maybe they just had. It didn't run like that, you know?
But it didn't matter. You just, you live day by day, and the seasons matter. Like, the changing of the seasons and maintaining the kind of the crops and life around you was what mattered. You didn't count Monday to Friday, like, there's me off to work at 9 a.m. on Monday.
Yeah, and that's how I treat my time, and that's how I treat my leisure time and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, it is interesting. And yeah, time is a weird concept. It's like gender. It's not really what we think it is, and it's not linear.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, so with Imbolc, it is similar to Samhain and Bealtaine, and it is that it's a fire festival. Fire plays an integral part. Mm-hmm. And with Imbolc, and we know as in Ireland, you know, 1st February, St. Bridget's Day, even that, like, Bridget is known as a fire goddess, you know?
Yep.
So fire is a part of this. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get into her.
But later. Yeah, we will. Sarah will have all the information about lovely old Bridget for you. But as with Samhain, you know, we make bonfires to ward off evil spirits. At Bealtaine, we kind of light fires for protection and growth and purification. But at Imbolc, it would have been it would be more symbolic of the sun's return.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
So it's symbolic. It's hopeful. It is for hope. It's for, this is what we're waiting for these days to come. It's literally a symbol of the sun's return.
Everybody light your fires on February 1st. Will the sun back into existence?
Yes, please. Will
a bit of, like, you know, normality back into the world?
But it's true because, you know, with the start of February, right? So Imbolc is February 1st. You should light fires and candles. For Candlemas, which is February 2nd, right? They say you should have light, your candles lit all day as well. So it's the same thing. It's the sun's return. Like, will it back in? Encourage that, you know? And Imbolc kind of became intertwined with this kind of, with these little reading omens and divination practices as well, where they would try and predict the weather. And another way that this has something very, what's the word, modern that we still have today that kind of relates to this Celtic practice is Groundhog Day as well.
Yeah.
Right. So for Imbolc, I think it was very interesting. I found a bit of research that says that because it was so important, again, because agriculture and things like that are so important, they would want to predict the weather for the summer to see, you know, like, are we going to be able to have a harvest, to have food? Like, are the animals going to survive? Are we going to survive? You know, is it going to be an extra long, hard winter? So a popular omen was that if the weather was especially bad on the day of Imbolc, this meant there'd be a great summer on the way. And this, according to the Celts, was because in Irish folklore, we know the creature, the Cailleach, which translates like the witch, right? Like, it's Cailleach is the Irish word for witch.
Yeah.
But according to Irish folklore and the Celts, the Cailleach would spend the day of Imbolc collecting firewood for herself if winter was to last a bit longer, because she would know. So, and to do that, she would obviously need a bright and dry day to collect her wood, right? So Imbolc was, if it was wet and windy, that meant that the Cailleach had gone to sleep and winter would soon be over. Which is interesting, you know?
Which is really interesting. What I think is mad is I'm actually on a Groundhog Day website right now.
Wow, I love that that exists.
It has a countdown. There's a countdown to the live streaming of the Groundhog. It's like, it's so strange. I never understood stood this tradition, but now that we've linked it to paganism, I totally do. Like, the origins of it are based around German settlers in the US, isn't this? This is a US tradition. Yeah, Pennsylvania. And they brought over this tradition. And in Germany, it's related to the fact if a hedgehog is involved in the tradition. So they got the closest animal to a hedgehog in the US, which was a groundhog. And the idea that it's the groundhog emerges from the ground and he sees his shadow. He'll go back underground. And that means 6 more weeks of winter. But if he comes out of the ground and he doesn't see his shadow, it's a sign that spring is on the way. And that's, you know, so actually, if the weather is bad on the day, that's a better sign than if the weather is good.
Yeah.
Which is so bizarre. Like, you know, because you would think the opposite.
Yeah. And it's such a, like I was saying to Sarah, isn't Grant, like, that's still a thing. There's a movie.
Like, there's a live stream. Like, I'm looking at pictures of the crowds. Like, there's this fella in a top hat here. He's raising a groundhog into the air. The poor groundhog doesn't really know what's going on. I wonder, where does this fall with animal cruelty in the sense of, like,
They're nice to him, like,
I would imagine. Yeah, it's probably completely fine and not animal cruelty, but, like, does the hedgehog or the groundhog know he's going to be involved in this? Like, is he
not know?
Is he just like, what?
Or do you think they made him sign a waiver? Like, I would like you to participate on Groundhog Day at this time, you know?
I consent, yeah.
I don't think he consented to it, but hopefully, yeah, they're very nice to him. They let him go about his business, and I don't know. If he is lifting one, I hope it's like a healthy lift, and maybe
he looks fine. He looks like the scene in Simba, you know, where they lift Simba, and Simba's just like, "What's going on?" Like I'm looking out at a crowd attending. It looks like a festival.
Like I'm sure they're overwhelmed, but then it's maybe over so quickly that they kind of, obviously they show him, they see him, and then they kind of let him go back into his hole, and you think, okay, cool, that's it.
Probably.
You know, but anyway, it's so pagan, isn't it? That's what we were saying. That happens to this day. They are going to be live streaming this in a few days. Like,
I might tune in.
Like, I really want to now. I might have to just do that. So yeah. just letting you know, guys, there's going to be a live stream of Groundhog Day.
It happens in a place called Gobbler's Knob.
Stop.
Apparently that's a place. Gobbler's Knob.
That's
beautiful. Oh. Wow. Okay.
So there you go. And I mean, that feels so pagan. That happens to this day. And it's related to like, maybe this, yeah, like the pagan roots of the Celts thinking that a creature was collecting wood for the winter if it was to continue, you know, and this kind of thing. So same, you go to nature, you go to this poor little groundhog to kind of predict what the weather's going to be like for the coming 6 weeks.
Yep. And it's so weird because there's so many, like February is a strange month in the sense of around the world, there were and are global like recognitions of like this point in time. And like, if you think about it, like for a month, like February has a lot of kind of special days in it. Like I know everybody will say, oh yeah, Valentine's Day. But like, if you are like more up on your knowledge of like festivals in like throughout the year, February is a month that's like nearly every day has a saint or has a festival attached to it. Like, it's really interesting.
Something we wanted to bring up, which we thought was very interesting, like again, because there's literally something, it is such a packed and interesting month, I think, because of this. Like, people know the light is returning. It's all about rebirth and things growing, and you know, the kind of, I don't know, life quickening up a bit, people kind of, what's the word, like livening up, is that a word?
Like re-emerging maybe from like a hibernation.
Yeah, coming alive. Animals do come out of hibernation. Animals are going to start having the babies, mm-hmm. you know. And something we want to bring up, because I don't think I've ever even, like, people, I've never heard people talk about this. It's very rarely brought up or researched, or like I have only come across it when I have researched it myself, and I just think it's valid to bring up, and it's very interesting. You know, we just want to bring stuff up to you because we think it's fun, and you know, you'll see where we go with this. But something I find really interesting is that the Romans would actually celebrate something called Lupercalia on February 15th, and this all does link up. We know what happens February 14th now. So if we just take a few steps back to the Roman times, this is a pagan ancient festival, Lupercalia, in Rome every year, annually, known as Lupercalia, as far back as the 6th century BC. And it's linked to the founding of Rome, which people, I mean, you don't even have to know, but everybody knows the legend of Romulus and Remus.
Yeah.
You know, the founding twin brothers who supposedly founded Rome. And that's where the legend comes from, that according to legend, you know, the ancient king Amulius, ordered Romulus and Remus, his twin nephews, to be thrown into the Tiber River, to drown them as punishment for their mother's broken vow of celibacy. And a servant took pity on them, placed them in a basket in the river. The river god carried the basket to a wild fig tree. It got caught in the branches, and the brothers were rescued by a she-wolf. And she brought them and lived in this hill, in a den, called the Palatine Hill. And that is supposedly, according to legend, because that's where they were brought, that's where she raised these two babies. That's the hill where Rome was founded. Mm-hmm. The twins were later adopted by a shepherd and his wife, and learned his trade. And this is, what was it? They found the cave den of the she-wolf when they grew up, and named it Lupercal. And that's why it's thought Lupercalia took place in honor of the she-wolf, to kind of please the Roman fertility god Lupercus.
Okay.
And that's where that all kind of comes from. It would start at this hill, feasting and ritual sacrifice began at this hill. It's very carnal, this festival. It's wild, carnal, sexual. You know, I just think it's so interesting because that is the essence of February and things kind of being reborn and people emerging, right? It is all about like fertility, that kind of thing. And then the fact that we've kind of stripped that back and kind of, I don't know, censored and sanitized it, you know, in a very PG way. Not that, you know, we should be having cultish orgies and sacrifices on a hill. The Romans would gather at this hill where they would ritually sacrifice a goat because a goat stood for male sexuality. It symbolized male sexuality. Then, yes, then they would cut the goat into strips called thongs. And with this goat hide and thongs of goat, they would run naked around this hill, whipping women with these slices.
This is so, yeah.
And many women would have like welcomed these lashes onto their like bare skin because it was like a fertility rite. You know, they would think that getting whipped with this, you know, literally like the symbolic thing that represents, you know, like male sexuality, getting whipped with it, it would like make you fertile and ready to reproduce and, you know, things like that make sense. They would actually welcome being whipped with this bit of goat.
And nowadays they just say take folic acid, you know what I mean?
Like, for God's sake.
It doesn't have the same rawness to it.
No, I think that's fun. Can you imagine the scene? There's a bonfire, naked men running around, slapping women with slices of goat.
Sorry, it's quite funny.
You know? Yeah. And they would literally then have a jar of names where men would randomly choose a woman's name from the jar and couple up with her during the festival. And often, apparently, couples actually stay together up until the following year, the following festival. And most, like, a lot of them, like, apparently married and fell in love as well because you'd couple up that night, have this carnal night, and then actually stay together till the next festival. But they kind of go, actually, we like each other. This is going to continue, you know? But you can imagine, of course, I'm sure loads of hookups and orgies happen. But also, you know, people found each other during a goat slapping flesh time.
I mean, they have the matchmaking festival down in bloody, where is it? In where's the famous matchmaking festival in Ireland? Down in Clare somewhere. But I don't think it's of the same standard.
Of course not.
No.
Because, I mean, we've got Catholic shame in this country. Do you think we'd be whipping each other with goat slices? I don't think so. No. But, you know, even with this, like the Feast of Lupercalia, like over time, like the nakedness kind of lost popularity. It became more chaste. Women were whipped still. I think this still happens in, I should have looked this up. There's a country that still do this. They welcome men to kind of whip them for fertility. You know, and they're whipped, but like, you know, but while they're fully clothed. And the reason we're kind of bringing all this up, because I think it's valid. This is what happened in February. And then, if you remember, this happens on February 15th during pagan Roman times. Mm-hmm. And then in the 5th century AD, Pope Gelasius I eliminated Lupercalia specifically and declared February 14th, the day before, a day to remember the martyrdom of St. Valentine instead, because it's a much more chaste and just less disgusting carnal.
Yeah, it's acceptable way of, you know, expressing love in a kind of Christian like mantra. Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't think it's likely that he did intend it to be a day to commemorate love and passion, you know, but like, I don't even know how that even happened. I'm sure there's a whole history there how, you know, and there's so many legends surrounding St. Valentine, but the most common one is that, and there's been multiple apparently that were beheaded, well, like, during this time as well.
Oh, yeah.
So they don't know, again, there's this mystery around the actual... Who was the actual St. Valentine? Were there multiple?
Mm.
So mythologized at this point, isn't it? Even though in Ireland we have his bones, apparently.
I think that's bizarre how St. Valentine's bones are his in bones are here. Dublin.
Is because they were gifted. It's a, what is it?
Whitefriar Church, I think it is.
I think so. It's
I know, I mean, where it is.
I know where it is.
Yeah.
The fact that, yeah, they were gifted to like a bishop or pope as a gift from the Vatican, and he like left it in his attic or something for years until they realized, you know, they were sorting through his stuff and they're like, whoa, St. Valentine's bones.
I wanted it to have a label, or like, could they why is there a chest of bones up here? Like,
I don't know. And it's like some bones, it's not all of him. And then there, you can go see them and you can write St. Valentine notes. They leave this like book out and you can write notes and stand there, light candle beside him, and his bones are in a little box.
I think, but, Jenny, you haven't tried that yet. You know what I mean?
I did write him things. Like,
oh, did you?
Okay. I have written him things, but he just hasn't blessed me.
Oh, okay, right. You've exalted all options then.
But also, isn't it like, it is bizarre. Like, how do we commemorate love and passion when this man was bloody executed?
I know, yeah. It's
romantic or lovely about this?
Yeah, it's not quite fitting of the vibe.
No, he's a martyr. And the most common thing, yeah, like on, this is in the 3rd century AD, a man named Valentine was executed by the Roman Emperor Claudius II. And he was imprisoned for assisting persecuted Christians. As we know, they were persecuted at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was marrying couples in secret, you know? And he was imprisoned for that in the first place. So, like, that's cool. I'm in prison. Great. Why do they commemorate me?
That's why, you know, he was marrying couples. He was still allowing, like, that kind of, you know, love to exist.
To secretly grow. Yeah, like, he was secretly marrying these couples, you know. Christian couples, of course.
Yeah, so you can imagine how in the Christian lens, that's such a, you know, it's a holy thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's something done in private. It's celebrating your religion, and it's still trying to continue the growth of that religion. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
And it's for love, right? For love, he was secretly marrying these people. You know, and the story goes that while he was imprisoned, he tried converting Claudius, the emperor, to Christianity. That did not go well.
Yeah.
Of course.
He's dead.
And he became enraged and ordered him to reject his faith or be killed, and that is how he became a martyr, because he didn't want to forsake his Christianity, and he was beheaded. So and the legend also says that during this time while he was imprisoned, he tutored a girl named Julia, who was the blind daughter of his jailer, and the legend states that God restored her sight after her and Valentine prayed together. And on the eve of his execution, because obviously he was her tutor in this time for however long he was imprisoned, he supposedly penned a note to her, and he signed it, "From your Valentine."
Oh.
Because his name was literally Valentine, you know. And then, as you can imagine, that's the thing that is supposedly that's what you'd be like, oh, from your secret Valentine. But he literally was like, it's like, from your Jenny, from your Sarah. He was like, from your Valentine.
And his name became iconic.
Can you imagine? But then also, yeah, you think of this man tortured and in prison, and we're like, yeah, a day of love and chocolates.
Yeah, I know, it's a strange, yeah.
It's strange. And yeah, and it's just bizarre, isn't it, that especially like the Pope, I'm sorry for pronouncing it, but Galatius I, he straight out was like, no, we can't be having this wild whipping festival. None of this. It's gonna be now St. Valentine's Day, the day before, you know. And so it became, not only then, like, obviously these in bulk traditions were kind of simmering down with time, then also something so pagan and wild like that got straight out eliminated and cancelled. You know, and things, yeah, do kind of get censored and what else did I say? Censored and
sanitized.
And sanitized, yeah. So it's just interesting.
No, it is. But it, again, as we said, like, it's great. Great is such a basic word. It's it's intriguing how this time of the year around the world was recognized as a big enough day that they held like, as you said, carnal celebrations, visceral celebrations that they marked these days.
Yeah.
Kind of like, again, like willing fertility, willing the sun, willing hope, willing weather. You know what? Like, folks, like, we're in a lockdown. Maybe this is a lot of willing could do the world a lot of good right now. I'm will all you want. I'm going to be willing. You know?
I'm going to be willing. I'm going to have myself some kind of, like, I am in lockdown like we all are, you know. So I know on Monday, on In Bulk, I'm going to give myself, like, a bath. I'm going to write my, like, intentions and wills down. I'll do something like that for myself, you know, to kind of will the sun back, will the lockdown to be over, will a vaccine, will everybody to want the vaccine,
yeah,
for us to get life going again, you know. Maybe if we all collectively will this.
If we all collectively at like 12 midday stand in our gardens and put our hands in the air and wave to the sky and maybe scream, you know, like,
yes,
will, and or shout support at the sun. I don't know. You can do it.
Yes.
We love you.
I think let's do that, you know. So we encourage other banshees to do the same.
If you're collective. All across. Yes, because we're screaming banshees.
Yes, yes. We're willing things to fruition. We're gonna scream this crap, you know.
Scream it away.
Yes, but seriously. But Sarah, can you tell me about Candlemas as well?
Oh, yeah, of course. I just have that scene in Midsommar. I don't know if you've ever seen the
yes,
horror movie. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's all Midsommar-y. This is kind of,
yeah.
But yeah, Candlemas. So it's got to do with the idea that So Mary, Mother of Christ, had to wait 40 days-ish to be blessed after giving birth to Christ, because apparently, you know, childbirth was a dirty thing at one point. You were not allowed to enter in through the main door of the church. You had to go in through the side door, which I know sounds so, like, trivial, but, like, in a community of symbolism, that's a pretty freaking big deal. That you're not allowed to enter in through, like, the most important door. So the woman would have to go and get blessed privately by the priest, and then she would be allowed to, like, rejoin the congregation normally. But the whole idea was that Mary went and she was getting blessed, and the priest was holding the baby Jesus, or, like, the whatever the equivalent of a Jewish priest is, I'm not sure. And he said, oh, with this day will always be remembered as a day where we light candles to remember this moment where you came into the church. And kind of that's where the idea of Candlemas came around. And, you know, there's supposed to be effigies of Mary where she wears this huge big crown filled with candles. Like, it looks something like something that you would see at Mardi Gras, you know what I mean? Like, there's something absolutely bizarre, huge big headpiece, and she's supposed to parade through the church. Now, it's not really done here. I think it's quite popular in South American countries, you know, kind of, again, very Catholic countries that kind of took the tradition on board and combined it with, like, festival kind of ideas.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's,
and that
their
is
way of, yeah, celebrating in their culture, you know. They saw fit to do it this way.
Yeah, and it is the 2nd of February.
Yes. Which is just everything. I love how they're all connecting, and they're all these February things, you know?
Yeah, no, I love it. So the big one on February, obviously, is probably in an Irish context, definitely, is St. Bridget and St. Bridget's Day. I think everybody knows it's St. Bridget's Day in the 1st of February.
Basically, yeah,
not,
all kids know.
Where but where have you been if you don't know? Like, everybody, like, I don't know.
Under a rock, yeah, as they say.
Under a rock. But St. Bridget is probably, she is such an important figure, obviously. She's one of Ireland's patron saints. Her, St. Patrick, and St. Columba, who wrote the Book of Kells, are the patron saints of Ireland. So,
and if you notice, she's the only woman out of two men, and the only woman patron saint, yeah.
Yeah, for Ireland, that is. And it's really interesting because she's combined, and I'll break it down further, but, like, there is the saint, St. Bridget, and there is the goddess Bridget. And there is a lot of crossovers between the saint and the goddess, to the point where we actually don't know what is goddess lore and what is saint lore. What we do know is that somebody existed. There was someone around, or something must have been there, because there is stuff written about her. You know what I mean? It's she's there is accounts, but what is separating like true account from what is lore is so hard to tell, which is why I think she's like, in terms of like St. Patrick, yes, we know St. Patrick's Day, but St. Patrick's Day didn't really have a lot of festivities around it, in the sense of like, yes, it had the big parades and stuff, but that was really done when Irish people went abroad to remember what Ireland looked like, you know. Yeah. And St. Patrick's Day being in the middle of Lent as well, you know, wasn't really a time when we could go out and hold big festivals, because, you know, that Lent is a time about restricting yourself.
And this is a feast, a festival's a feast.
Yes.
Yeah.
St. Bridget's Day, of every Irish saint, she has the most, like, customs and traditions associated with her. Like, it's, I think that's so interesting. It's not St. Patrick.
She's so visceral and so here and so present still, you know?
Yeah, and like, people, like, Bridget in Ireland was such a common name. Like, nowadays, I don't know how common that is. But, like, if you go back to, God, turn of the century, you know, last century, there are so many people called Bridget. If you go back into the 1800s, every woman was called Bridget.
Yeah.
In fact, it became such a thing where Bridget became just another word for woman, particularly in, like, the UK, because there were so many Irish emigrating to the UK and so many Irish women were called Bridget that they just called Irish women Bridgets.
Wow.
So I kind of almost became a bit of a put down. And then, of course, the idea of you would call somebody a biddy. You know, if somebody was an old biddy, it means they're, you know, finger wagging, irritating, kind of peeking out the window at you. Of course, that comes from the name Bridget. Again, to put you down, you know, because there was obviously so many Bridgets. You're an old biddy, you know, you're an old Bridget.
Yeah.
I never even copped that until I was doing the research. And I was like, Jesus, yeah, that's right. But then, of course, there are so many different ways to spell her name, which I think is also interesting. Like, there's some people put D's, some people put G's, some people put T's. Everybody has a spelling of Bridget, and none of them are technically wrong. It's so interesting how she like moves in terms of famous people called Bridget. Bridget Medler, is she a woman?
Yeah,
maybe she was in Disney Channel.
Yeah, maybe. At least there's that.
If you want to classify her as a famous person, just. I think she spells her name B-R-I-D-G-E-T.
That's the way I'd know it.
I would know it, yeah, as well. Yeah. But there are so many different ways. But anyway, let me get into who St. Bridget was. So there are so many, like, churches. There are so many places around Ireland associated with St. Bridget. If you are from a town called Kilbride or Knockbride, you are from somewhere that was given a name after Bridget. Anything to do with bride is derived from the term Bridget. So she first appeared in a 7th century, so a 600s year book called Vita Sanctae Bridgetae. My Latin is terrible, which translates to Life of St. Bridget. And it's most likely the earliest account of her life. So according to tradition, Bridget was born in the year 451 AD in Fogart, just north of Dundalk in County Louth. And what's interesting about her was she was already a saint by the time this was written. So 100 years or so after her death, which we'll get into a little bit later on. But she was already a saint 100 years later. So just keep that in mind, which is unusual enough in the saint world.
Yeah.
So her mother is said to have been called Bracha, who was a Christian picked slave, who was later baptized by St. Patrick. And her father was Dovtach, a chieftain of Leinster. So she was born into slavery by her mother and obviously the father having, you know, questionable relationship with a slave mother, whether it's consenting or not, you know, it's all up in the air. So it says, the document says that Dovtach's wife was forced to sell Bridget's mother, so the King of Leinster's actual wife, sold Bridget's mother, the slave, and her daughter to a druid, you know, when she was pregnant. And the legends say, so the earliest legends of Bridget's holiness come from her vomiting when the druids tried to feed her due to his impurity. So there you, there's the first thing.
Okay.
That's the first sign, apparently, that she was special. So
she couldn't handle the food that he was giving her.
Yeah, because she was just like, you're disgusting.
Okay.
Vomiting at him. So as she grew older, Bridget was said to have performed miracles, including healing and feeding the poor. According to one such tale, as a child, she gave away her mother's entire store of butter. The butter was then replenished in answer to Bridget's prayers. Around 10, she was returned to the household served to her father, where her habit of charity led her to donate her belongings to anyone who asked. In the earliest biographies, Dovetalk is portrayed as having been so annoyed when Bridget, when he took her in a chariot to the King of Leinster to sell her. When Dovetalk was talking to the king, Bridget gave away his bejeweled sword to a beggar to barter for food to feed his family. So either she was a kleptomaniac, or, you know, she was very holy and just kept giving away things. Basically, just don't leave her in a room alone, with your stuff, is what we're saying.
Yeah.
But this has kind of got to do with how she was recognized for her holiness and kindness. She's a very much a saint associated with kindness.
Yeah.
So according to tradition, around 480, Bridget founded a monastery in Kildare, which means the Church of the Oak, on the site of a pagan shrine to the Celtic goddess Bridget. So this is where the crossover starts to happen, okay? So there was already a Celtic goddess called Bridget being worshipped on the place where Saint Bridget decided she was going to set up her church.
Interesting, okay. And then this Bridget is a Celt, like the Celts would have worshipped her, and she is like a fire goddess, daughter of Dagda.
Yeah.
Who is like the chief Celtic deity. And so he's one of the Tuatha Dé Danann, you know, the first inhabitants of Ireland, who are kind of this like mythical race of people. So that is who this goddess Bridget is, daughter of Dagda. And she supposedly, like, she also, you know, being maybe more than human, daughter of a god, or Tuatha Dé Danann kind of chief. She was also known for, healing, smithing, the arts and crafts, tending to livestock and serpents.
Mm-hmm.
And she's credited for creating a whistle for people to find themselves in the night.
Yeah.
And some legends claim that she was like half very beautiful, half very ugly.
Yeah, she's very much also associated with inventing the idea of keening, which we mentioned in our Banshee and Debt Omens episode, where when her son Rudon died in battle, she went out to the battlefield and mourned for him and cried for him out loud. So she's also associated with that.
This is the goddess
Bridget. This is the goddess Bridget. And what's really interesting about the goddess Bridget as well is that, so on the site of where Saint Bridget's monastery was being built, there were supposed to have been a group of 19 women that tended to what was called the Eternal Flame, and that was on this location. And this location is where you know, they kept this flame alit to worship her. And it was well documented as well. There was this scholar at the time called Gerald of Wales, who was very well traveled, and he has accounts of this flame. And what's interesting is, this flame, when Saint Bridget took over the monastery, it wasn't put out. It was still tended to, and it became a symbol again of hope, of Christianity, of the fire of, like, you know, faith. So the flame was never went out. But what I think is this, you're gonna love this, okay? So the sacred flame is said to have been surrounded by a hedge that no man could cross.
I love
and
that.
And men who attempted to cross the hedge were said to have been cursed by going insane or dying or becoming crippled.
I do love that. Yeah, Sarah said that because, I'm just such a... The witch in me really likes that aspect. But that is so, like how... Like, that is just everything. Like, you know, this reminds me of, like, how the Greeks would have worshipped these. They would have had the same kind of thing. These, like, what's the word? temples. There were, yeah, like temples for goddesses where they would have had things like this as well. The eternal flames, like women only kind of cults, or what you say, like not even priestesshoods. But, you know, kind, yeah, of cults. Yeah, like they're goddess cults where, yeah, it was women only. And I love that the goddess Bridget had that. And I, yeah, guess that is why, yeah, like Saint Bridget and her became so intertwined. Like, how could you not, when firstly you have the same name, you build it on the same site, and then you can, yeah, you maybe she, like, yeah, integrated, or even though this was such a pagan thing, she allowed that to stay there and continue tending to it.
Yeah, like, and what's interesting, kind of sticking on Bridget, the saint for a moment, is because she's associated as a fire goddess, she's obviously associated with the idea of the forge, you know, the blacksmithing. She was born from a tower of flame reaching from the top of her head to the heavens. And her birth, which took place at sunrise, is rumored to have given the family house appearance of being on fire, goddess Bridget is associated with protection from fire. But when you make a St. Bridget's cross, you are making that and hanging that up. And one of the traditions associated with it is its protection of fire. Okay. So there is the lore of the saint and the goddess becoming together.
Together. And then you're meant to burn the cross every year and make a new one on St. Bridget's, aren't you?
Sometimes they kept them up in like the roof of houses, and that was how old you could tell a house was by how many St. Bridget's crosses you would take down from the rafters. Quite funny. But this shrine, so this eternal flame that was on the site in Kildare, was kept active for years, like well up until the Reformation times, when it was put out by King Henry VIII's supporters, and you know, okay, people when they came around and started taking out all of the
Catholics. None of this Irish pagan shite.
Well, none of the Catholic stuff, you know, because this was the beginning of the Reformation, so they were taking out anything that was obviously of Catholic origins and the saints. So when you think about it, this is the fifth century the flame was documented as being lit. Probably, yeah, around from earlier, and it apparently stayed lit until the 16th century.
Wow.
Which is eons, you know.
Yeah.
But then it wasn't until 1996 that a present day Bridgetan nun decided to relight the flame again.
Oh my goodness.
1996, it was a huge like time pause where it, yeah, wasn't. And nowadays, the flame is lit, and there is a big kind of sculpture based in Kildare town, and it's a bronze sculpture that looks like it's a candle holder kind of idea with oak leaves around it, and they light the candle there on St. Bridget's Day to keep the eternal flame kind of going. Now, it's not lit throughout the year, but it is done on St. Bridget's Day in that symbolism, which is, yeah, kind of nice that we're, you know, it's connecting back.
Yeah.
I wish it was more maybe of an event, you know.
Yeah.
But look, that's what we have. But anyway, going back now to St. Bridget. Okay, so where we are in the timeline is she's setting up her monastery in Kildare. Yeah. So she is credited with organizing communal consecrated religious life for women in Ireland. She founded two monastic institutions, one for men and one for women. For centuries, Kildare was ruled with a double line of abbot bishops and abbesses, and the abbess of Kildare was regarded as the superior general of the monasteries in Ireland. Oh. Which is a big thing, you know, as a female role in a patriarchal institution, you know, that's a huge thing.
Yeah, seriously.
And, you know, because of her abbey, Kildare kind of became a centre of religion and learning, and it developed into a cathedral city. And obviously, you know, Maynooth being in Kildare, while not associated with St. Bridget, it kind of shows how, you know, religious education stayed within that county.
Yes, absolutely.
But she's also accredited with founding a school of art, including metalwork and illumination. And the Kildare Scriptorium made the book of Kildare, and this scholar, Gerald of Wales, he went on about how this book was so beautiful. It didn't look like how a human could have done it. It had to have been done by angels. And then it was stolen during the Reformation.
Oh, stop. Is it gone?
It's gone. We don't know where it is.
Oh, no.
We know that there was a book of Kildare, but we don't know where it is. And I freaking think that's so upsetting. Wow. That this book, particularly because it was associated with, like, you know, a woman, is just gone and not even a thing that we know about. So where it is, it's probably destroyed, like.
Maybe they were so angry a woman had made this, you know, that could have been a part of it. Or it would just be so nice to have that when it's something that's more important, maybe, and more beautiful than the Book of Kells and things like that. If it was so beautiful, you know.
Like, yeah, and it just
could have been the most important manuscript we have.
It would have been up there as one of the most important manuscripts. And it's just such a shame how freaking colonial forces coming in and taking,
stealing things.
Get out, like, get out. But anyway, that's that. So Bridget was said to travel all around Ireland, and she was a very good friend of St. Patrick, which, as I had been saying to Jenny before the episode, satisfies me greatly that, you know, it's like when you find out, like, your favourite authors were all friends living at the same time. It's like, woo, the saints were friends together. I don't know.
It's like everybody knows each other in Hollywood. It's that kind of thing as well.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that. Of course, just, they were hanging out together. Like,
I just think that is so funny. But it's also like, you know, Ireland being the land of saints and scholars. St. Bridget, St. Patrick. I don't know. Maybe it's just my primary school vibes coming back to me. But it's like that nice little, woo, happy Ireland kind of days.
Yeah, before the colonial times. Yeah, before being colonized all the time.
So we're coming up to saints. So basically, St. Bridget lived as a abbess and living her best life doing that. An interesting kind of legend that I should tell you about in regards to the famous miracle that took part for the for how our church came around. I would say a lot of people who know St. Bridget know this story, so I'm gonna kind of bring back a memory that maybe you kind of forgot about. But she was told, so it is she told the king that the place where she stood would be the perfect spot for a convent. It was beside a forest where her members could collect firewood. There was a lake nearby that would provide water, and the land was fertile. And the king laughed at her and refused to give her any land. And Bridget prayed and asked God to soften the king's heart. Then she smiled at him and said, "Will you give me as much land as my cloak will cover?" And the king thought she was joking and agreed. So she laid out her cloak, and her four sisters took up, so I'd say sisters in terms of like followers, you know, nuns, grabbed the four edges of the cloak and began to run. And as they ran with the cloak, it began to spread and get bigger and bigger and bigger. And the king started screaming out, "Oh, Bridget, you know, what are you about?" And she said, "I am, or rather my cloak is covering your whole province to punish you for your stinginess to the poor."
Wow.
And then he was like, "Call your maidens back. I will give you a decent plot of ground." And thus she was persuaded. And then the king handed over a reasonable sized amount of the land where she could be able to build her church. And that is one of the big things that's I know I learned about that in primary school is...
Yeah.
The kind of idea she spreads her cloak. That's the big miracle. But there's a few other miracles associated with her. And Bridget obviously is very much associated with femininity and protection of women and all of that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of instances where she she gets revenge on men, which I think is just quite interesting. So let me tell you a story. So after Bridget promised God a life of chastity, her brothers were annoyed at the loss of a bride price. And when she was outside carrying a load past a group of poor people, some began to laugh at her. A man named Bacchane said to her, "The beautiful eye which is in your head will be betrothed to a man whether you like it or not."
Oh, for God's sake. It's literally like, yeah, well, you might not want kids or marriage now, but you never know. Like, when you meet the right man, you know, you'll just... No.
That is it. But in response, Bridget thrust her finger into her eye and said, "Here is the beautiful eye for you. I deem it unlikely that anyone will ask for a blind girl." And her brothers panicked and they tried to save her and wash the blood from her wound, but there was no water to be found. And Bridget said to them, "Put my staff about this sod in front of you." And they did, and a stream came forth from the ground. Then she said to Bacchane, "Soon your two eyes will burst in your head." And as she said this, it happened.
Oh my God, Bridget.
She's a bit of a boss, like, you know?
I love that. Yeah, to blind yourself, to make yourself ugly so you would be unmarriable is like, oh, I can't.
It's satisfying. But one of the most interesting miracles that I've been telling Jenny about is something that kind of would go against your standard Christian morals, you know? So it's interesting how a Christian saint did this. So I'll read it to you. I'll give you a second to think about it, and then we'll tell you what we think it is. So one of the miracles that is associated with her is, so this is something that has been translated out of this 7th century book. So a certain woman who had taken a vow of chastity fell through youthful desire of pleasure, and her womb swelled with child. Bridget, exercising her most potent strength of her ineffable fate, blessed her, causing the child to disappear without coming to birth and without pain. She faithfully returned that woman to health and to penance. So we kind of think this was Bridget kind of
performing an abortion.
Yeah, bringing about an act of abortion.
Yeah.
Through an act of forgiveness, you know, like it's
anything like, yeah, like she, you tell me women never knew that women always knew the weight of being pregnant, you know, especially at these times where, you know, say there isn't a husband or there isn't a prospect of marriage or you didn't have a dowry or you were, yeah, very poor, you were unhealthy, whatever. Like there's so many layers to being a pregnant woman, especially in the past. So not only as an act of forgiveness of like, you know, something like that, you were supposed to take a vow of chastity and Bridget was so like, okay, your mistake is forgiven. It was, you know, you're young. It was a flaw. You're forgiven. Yeah. I'm not going to shame you for falling to lust or wanting to do that. And she also helped her alleviate a very problematic, scary situation.
Yeah. So, you know, Bridget kind of is a bit of a cool feminist, you know, which I think is a...
I think she's straight out feminist. Yeah, like this, she's, I love that. And it is, it's so interesting because I have never heard that until you told me. And the fact that this patron saint of Ireland in a Catholic country where we had to fight for the right to have abortions here very recently, like, and that was never talked about. That's never, of course, they're not going to bring that up.
That's probably
performed an abortion. Yeah. Whether it was mystical and magical and through God's powers, it was an abortion.
Yeah, it still is the idea that she took away a pregnancy, you know, before, you know, like deliberately took away a pregnancy as separate from like accidentally losing a pregnancy.
Yeah.
You know, so
I think that's very interesting.
It is very interesting. But now we're kind of coming up to that point in Bridget's life where she's dying. And I'm going to tell you the short story because it's interesting because, again, it connects back to the goddess Bridget. So I'll compare these. So the monk Ultane of Ardbraccan, who wrote A Life of Bridget, recounts the story of Darludoc, Bridget's favourite pupil, who fell in love with a young man and, hoping to meet him, sneaked out of her bed in which she and Bridget were sleeping. However, recognising her spiritual peril, she prayed for guidance, then placed burning embers in her shoes and placed them upon her. And thus by fire, she put out the fire and by pain extinguished the pain. She then returned to bed and Bridget had been feigning sleep. She was damn well aware that Darludoc had gone off. Yeah. And the next day, Darludoc revealed to Bridget the experience of the night before, and Bridget assured her that now safe from the fire of passion and the fire of hell hereafter, which is a bit grim, and then healed her student's feet.
Mm-hmm.
So devoted was the student to her teacher that when Bridget lay dying, Dara Ludoc expressed the wish to die with her, but Bridget said that she would die on the anniversary of her death. And tradition says she did. Tradition says she died a year later. So Dara Ludoc was only the second abbess of Kildare for about a year. So Bridget is said to have died around 521, which is mad. And both women share the same feast day, even though obviously St. Bridget dominates it. Yeah. But what is interesting about Dara Ludoc in relation to the saint is the name that Dara Ludoc may have been the original name for the goddess Bridget.
Okay.
So because the name Bridget means exalted one, it is a title rather than her actual name.
Yes.
So there is the idea that Dara Ludoc, according to this scholar Mary Condren, Dara Ludoc was actually who the goddess Bridget was, and she then became Bridget through the saint, through the abbess of Kildare. So you see now, even in Bridget's death, there is this kind of weird parallel of potentially the goddess Bridget sitting there with Saint Bridget, and what's going on? You can't distinguish what is her life and what is the lore of the saint, or what is the lore of the
mythology. What was the life of an actual Bridget?
It's so interesting. So Bridget was buried in Kildare until the Reformation, and they had to move her body because they thought, oh crap, she's going to be freaking dug up and thrown around the place. So they buried her in Downpatrick, except her head went on a tour of Europe. Her head ended up getting into Austria. Then it managed to go to Lisbon. And apparently in Lisbon, her head is still present. But her head is obviously in bits, because bits of her head are in Ireland. But the majority of her head is in Lisbon. So St. Bridget is, she's not together wherever she is.
Valentine, isn't it? Bits of him are here, bits of him in Vatican or wherever else in Rome.
It's so strange.
Poor Bridget.
But what I want to kind of tell listeners about, because I didn't realise this, was I thought it was funny how 100 years after her death, Bridget had been made a saint, because I was like, oh, you know, like, normally I thought that process takes longer. So it turns out that in early Christian times, you could be made a saint by a local bishop. So there were a lot of saints that kind of had sketchy origins and, like, questionable, like, lives that had been made saints. And in 1969, the Catholic Church decided, I don't like these saints, and demoted a whole pile of them. They just were like, nah, we can't take their word on it. And Saint Bridget was one of the saints that was demoted from sainthood. So in theory, Saint Bridget is not recognized by the Catholic as an official saint. Now, that is not to say that she is not a saint, because there are probably like hundreds of people who have died over time who would never have been recognized by the Catholic Church, but were still considered saints. You know, because of their circumstances.
Or whatever.
But she is not considered a saint. But yet, in the Irish context, she's still referred to as Saint Bridget. There are still churches named after her. There are still portraits made about her. There are statues about her. There are holy wells.
Saint Bridget's Day.
Oh, yes.
She is still our patron saint.
Yeah, Saint Bridget is very much part of the landscape. And that's what I love about her is, you know, there are holy wells dedicated to her. There are holy shrines. There are physical trees. She is part of the earth, you know, and there's something very spiritual about her rather than piousness, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, she is kind of about that nature, about going back into connecting with your landscape, being aware of your body, as we can totally see. And also kind of what I love about her is that as a woman, kind of standing on your own two feet and not letting, you know, maleness define you. The fact that there was a hedge that men would become crippled by if they jumped over. The fact that there are so many accounts of her, like, injuring men, to be honest, who like
who very well deserved it sometimes.
Yeah,
mate.
Who like, were being rude to her or like threatened her chastity vow or anything like that. You know, Bridget was a badass.
She was.
I'm proud of her a lot.
I'm very proud of her. Yeah, that's bizarre because I would have never thought that she was someone they decanonized. Is that a word?
Yeah, decanonized. Yeah.
Like, wow.
I know, and like as part of a cultural phenomena in Ireland, she's a big enough deal that to obviously that when she was demoted, we didn't pay any attention to it.
No, but I think there's something nice to, like, as you said, yeah, maybe some saints had like sketchy beginnings and there were so many of them. That's why the Catholic Church did have to review them all. But I think there's something nice to the fact that local bishops, like that, that's why there were so many local people.
Yeah.
Local bishops decided who was a saint and not the Vatican or the Catholic Church as an entity. Yep. That is very nice. It plays into like, it's just like local folklore, local lore, because the local people would have known, there'd be local stories about these people, they would have been locals, you know, to whatever, all these little villages and stuff. There's something nice about that. And yeah, I think this speaks to the power of her, that even though the Vatican straight out was like, yeah, she's not a saint anymore, Ireland was like, no.
whether Bridget the goddess or whether Bridget the saint was real, what she stands for, you know, and her legacy still exists to this day. And as a female figure in mythology, in history, in religious iconography, like, it's a really big deal to say, like, that she's still respected and held up to the same standard as she was being written about back in the 7th century.
Yeah.
So what she stands for, you know, she should not be dismissed. And, like, I mean, I think there's so much art about her. You know, you often see her. I think that's why, like, in recent years, St. Bridget's Day in Ireland has very much become like a celebration of women. I see a lot of places, you know, hosting female events about like female musicians or female scholars or like female aimed kind of things to kind of promote women in certain sectors, to give them a platform and a visibility that they maybe wouldn't otherwise get, to draw attention to their work. The fact that Bridget, whoever she was, you know, that's what she stands for at a time and when she could have easily been dominated by male
patriarchy
and male agendas, she stood her ground. So I think we have to applaud Bridget on that.
She is not without a doubt a badass feminist figure, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, to this day it's a women's festival, even in witchcraft and in Wicca, it is a women's day. It is counted as women's day. Like, women would separate, either they're all female covens or groups, or they'd send the men away and have their own things, you know, their own little rituals and things like that. And it makes sense. I mean, it's a powerful woman that you want to celebrate, but, you know, celebrate your powerful womanness and feminism and all that kind of thing, and things women have achieved overall. Like, yeah, absolutely.
And if you want to kind of embrace St. Bridget's, or Bridget as you know, as this essence, she is the patron saint of, now I'm sure there's going to be somebody that some section here is going to suit you, of babies, blacksmiths, boatmen, cattle farmers, children whose parents are not married, children whose mothers are mistreated by their fathers.
Wow.
The Clan Douglas, dairymaids, dairy workers, fugitives, Ireland, Leinster, mariners, midwives, milkmaids, nuns, poets, the poor, poultry farmers, poultry raisers, printing presses, sailors, scholars, travellers, and watermen.
That's everything.
So I'm sure you have to fit in at least one category there.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a very nice, well-rounded thing, and but there's a theme, you know, you can feel it, like,
yeah, there's a theme. I like it. I do, you know, the hard lives, like, yeah,
and of like fire and the hearth and home and things that, you know.
Yeah, she's a big one for the fire.
Yeah, things like that. And yeah, and you can, like, you know, people would make bridges, they were called. It's basically like a little effigy or a doll of Bridget, you know, traditionally, or like the Celts would even do this goes that far back. They would make a little, yeah, effigy, a little doll that represented Bridget. The women would traditionally make this. They would dress her in white. They would put her in a basket. You would leave offerings out to her, either in the basket in your home, in front of your fire. Some people would set up a bed in front of their fire in case the goddess visited and wanted to rest. You would burn candles in the fire all day and all night. Some people left their, say, like items of clothing or things like that out on your doorstep for her to bless, things like that. And you would, yeah, that's something you can do if you really want to still, of
yeah,
course.
By all means, make your St. Bridget's crosses. You can look up some designs on Google and get some ideas. Yeah, if you want, you, as Jenny said, leave something out on the window on St. Bridget's Eve. So on the 31st, you're supposed to do that because she's meant to, the idea of Bridget wandering the countryside and wandering Ireland on the Eve is like very prominent. So she's said to touch a lot of stuff. So yeah, if you leave your cross or you leave your cloth outside, it's meant to have the cure for headaches and sore throats. And you know what? Like coronavirus, like this just... Who's to say, you know, let's put it out there.
Or like light a candle for the day, you know, something small like that can be your way to celebrate it and remember her and celebrate the women in your life, celebrate yourself. I might take a ritual bath, you know, something like that, write about my desires and wishes and remember such a badass woman.
Yeah, so St. Bridget's Day is a day to be good to yourself and do mark it in some way, whatever that is, particularly if, you know, for female listeners out there, what she represents for us is like undeniably important. So like, do take a moment to even just spare a thought for Bridget on the day.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be religious. I'm not religious, but I'm going to be doing it from that aspect, you know?
Yeah.
There you have it. That's our little episode on everything. Like, the start of February, in bulk, Bridget, Lupercalia, celebrating the birth of things again, February and things like that. So, you know, we hope you enjoyed that. I know it was a lot of stuff, but we thought it was very interesting to discuss these things and bring them to light. And how often do you hear people talk about Bridget and Lupercalia and bloody in bulk?
In the same hour.
Especially in the same hour, yeah.
There you go.
And when have you heard banshees talk about this? Never. So,
and we will be back. We can say, like, quite happily, we will be continuing our episodes. So, you know, we're in it now. So
we're in it now, or for now, because we can. Yeah. So please, you know, again, thank you for everyone who listens to us. Thank you for supporting us. Thank you to everyone who said lovely things about the last episode. You know, we love that you're here. And please, please keep holding out hope. Look forward to better, longer days and enjoy your St. Bridget's Day, your in bulk. If you want to celebrate Lupercalia, anything, enjoy it. Welcome in the sun and be kind to yourselves.